The Florida Wildlife Corridor 2018 expedition gets underway this month. We'll talk to the explorers and see where they're heading this time. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at baycareevents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WUSF Public Media, I'm Robin Sessingham. The Florida Wildlife Corridor Expedition Team has been trekking through scrub, swamps, and forests from one end of our state to the other. They've documented their journeys in film, books, and photography exhibitions with a goal of demonstrating the urgent need for an unbroken spine of wilderness running the length of the state to give wildlife a chance for survival. Their third expedition is scheduled for later this month. WUSF is a sponsor and we'll be reporting on the trip, and we have the team here with us to talk about it. Mallory Likes Dimmitt is Vice President of Strategic Development at Likes Brothers, Inc. and the former Executive Director of the Florida Wildlife Corridor. Hi, Mallory.
Hello.
Carlton Ward Jr. is a conservation photographer and co-founder of the Florida Wildlife Corridor Campaign. And wildlife biologist Joe Guthrie is speaking to us from Charlottesville, Virginia. His work tracking bears in Florida was the inspiration for the first expedition in 2012. Welcome, Joe.
Hi, Robin. Thank you.
So, Carlton Ward, you've taken photographs of extraordinary places all over the world, but you've chosen to focus on Florida. So why? Why Florida?
I started my career going places like Central Africa or the Amazon. It felt like I was going really far away from home to find stories that hadn't been told. But I would go away for 2 or 3 months at a time and come home, and there was a new subdivision on what used to be a cattle ranch in Florida, and I felt not enough people talking about that. So really from that point, I started photographing Florida agriculture and Florida ranches, and that led me to Joe and learning about the black bears and the way they use not just public lands but heavily relied on private lands. And that was, you know, the foundation of what we're trying to do with the Wildlife Corridor
project.
That's
how it all got started. And that was about in what, about 2010?
That was actually in 2006, kind of the precursor to formalizing the corridor idea.
And then, Joe, you guys covered a lot of ground in your last two trips in 2012 and 2015. It's 1,000 miles each trip. So why do another?
I think our interest is really to continue telling the story as best we can and approaching it in new and different ways each time. Both in 2012 and 2015, we were trying to highlight the kind of end-to-end and the, you know, covering many different landscapes and different ecosystems. And in, you know, coming years, I think our interest is to try and highlight some of these smaller, more regional connections that really stand to lose if we don't do responsible planning and think about the green infrastructure that the state corridor network really needs.
So focusing in on smaller areas you feel like are crucial.
Okay. Yes.
Mallory, so what has the organization been doing since the last trip in 2015?
Well, we've been continuing our educational and awareness campaign really to raise the visibility of the Florida Wildlife Corridor so that people, even when we're not out there trekking, can still follow along and follow, you know, the imagery and stories from these places that sort of make it a virtual trip year-round. That's been the biggest focus, is to bring this sort of to life. But there's also been planning about how we can, as Joe said, focus in on some of the smaller regional connections and bring attention to them. And that's what's led us to this kind of wildly different approach for a short one-week trek, really trying to highlight this idea of the corridor at a crossroads in the middle of the state and where the highest sort of development and growth is happening. And yet there are these places that remain that are thin threads of wildlife habitat.
Yeah, so let's talk about the difference between what you did before. Carlton, how long did you spend out in the field?
The previous expeditions were, the first one was 100 days, the next one was 70 days. They each took a year to plan. In those expeditions, we were going kind of as far away from the built infrastructure as possible to show this wildness that's hidden in plain sight running through the spine of Florida and through the panhandle. But through that journey, you could get the impression that we're out in wild nature and everything is okay because we were going where the bear or the panther would likely travel.
Right. What's the problem? Mm-hmm. There's so much wilderness.
So this time we're going right into the heart of the issues where we're hopefully going to draw some clarity and focus on corridors that could really be blinked out of existence in the next few years if we don't do something about it.
So these are just sort of like very narrow bottleneck areas connecting larger wilderness areas. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, and they're at the urban edge. We're really going to be sort of intertwined with the edge of Orlando metropolitan area. And so it'll be much more visible that we'll be, you know, crossing more roads with growth really close. I mean, at the narrowest point, some of these wildlife corridor here is less than 0.3 miles wide. So some of that will be very visible in this trek.
That's really narrow.
Mm-hmm.
That's the connection between two wildlife areas is 0.3 miles. And that seems...
Well, not for the whole length of it. And there are certainly wider stretches, but there are these pinch points or there are places where, you know, the development pattern has sort of led to an encroachment on both sides. And so, you know, at a bridge crossing or, you know, as you get closer to the Disney area or the resort areas on the edge of Orlando, there's a lot of continued growth into these former wild places. Parts of them have been protected really for the floodplain values and as part of a watershed, but parts of them have not been.
So you've got this narrow, crucial area where if this gets developed, you feel like that would be a big blow to this whole project of a wildlife corridor. And Joe, what is this particular corridor that you're going to be tracking along is right near Walt Disney World, right?
That's right, in the northern extent of Reedy Creek, which is going to be kind of the starting point for this expedition, one of the northernmost waterways in the Everglades headwaters.
Okay, so Walt Disney World knows about this project. They know that you're coming. How are they helping you? What's their role in this?
Yes, we are very lucky to enjoy the support of Walt Disney World and a couple of other organizations like Mosaic and Duke Energy that are helping make this trek possible. And so what it takes is people both on the ground being able to sort of guide us to appropriate access points so that our crew can kind of come in and we can not only check up the waterways, but so that we can, you know, have film crew accompany us, media can join us at certain places, that kind of thing. So there's a lot of on-the-ground knowledge from Water Management District staff and the Improvement District and Disney itself to help us figure out those logistics.
Who owns this land? Does Disney own it? Could they just donate it to the Florida Wildlife Corridor? Who owns it?
The beauty of this is that there's a lot of public land. And so we'll be, you know, even though there's private development kind of on both sides and, you know, Disney is obviously corporation owned, there is a lot of public land, as I mentioned, that sort of follows the water courses. So it's an interesting story in that a lot of it has already been protected. But the challenge is, can we keep those connections going across the whole length of this that would tie what we're calling the heartland area south of here to the headwaters in the Green Swamp region and keep those connections all the way through?
So, Carlton, what are these trips like? You are out there carrying your supplies with you. You've got your photography equipment and, I guess, tents and food and things like that. And what's it like? How does everyone get along?
We generally get along pretty well. I mean, it's such a mission-driven thing that we're doing that there's really all of our energy is putting one foot in front of the next, getting to the next campsite, generating the imagery and the writing and the content we need to do to share the story. I mean, this is going to be unlike any of the others we've done because even though it's so close to Orlando, I don't think this route's really been done before. It's one of these hidden in plain sight, wild strands, and it's not like we can call up and figure out the water level of the known paddling trail or follow in the footsteps of a hiking route. We're going to have to blaze a path here. And from that standpoint, we don't know how far we're going to be able to make it based on water conditions or number of downed trees from Irma. So instead of knowing where we're going to camp every night, we're going to do the best we can and make sure we get through it by the end of the first, you know, several days.
Do you have help?
It takes a village, really, to make each one of these expeditions possible. And so there'll be the three of us in the field, plus there'll be other folks who join us along the way. Plus there are folks watching us from afar and logistics help kind of in the field, but not directly with us, that can sort of meet up with us at these certain access points. So it's, you know, a core team of 8 or 10 folks that really make this possible. And then, as I said, we have lots of supporters who are behind the scenes who will be helping us to launch this at the start and celebrate at the end. or otherwise sort of underwrite our experience, and hopefully lots of people who follow along virtually. So it becomes,
which is the whole point. You're just trying to get this out to as many people as possible, make this problem known to as many people as possible. And,
right.
And Joe, do people kind of, you know, on these trips, does everyone sort of break down into their specialties or something they enjoy doing? Does one of you take charge of planning and one fire building? How does that all work?
Those are good questions.
Joe builds
to a certain extent,
fire.
Yes.
Could.
To a certain extent, yes. I mean, we all have to have a grasp on what the route is for the day and what we're likely to see, who we're likely to meet. We need to kind of be briefed on that going in. But each day, we tend to, divvy up tasks. So, you know, who does the cooking, who does the dishes, who builds the fire. Those things change from day to day. We're all pretty experienced outdoors people. And I tend to have the axe in hand more than
Mallory.
The other.
I'll add to that I think up front in the planning phase is where we kind of specialize a little bit. So each of us has a little bit of a different role in the planning. But once we start the trek, we kind of all come together and we're all making the same mileage every day. And we really do that together as a team. So in this week, Carlton is really working on the sort of technical aspects and gear and what we should bring. And, you know, Joe's been doing a lot of the route planning and I've been doing the sort of larger coordination role. So we do all specialize. And then, like I said, it's really neat to have it kind of come together and start hiking.
Yeah.
Or paddling or whatever the case may be. We kind of put all modes in one, so this one might include a little bit of biking as well.
So what happens when you get to an obstacle? Joe, when you get to, she was talking about trees might be down because of Hurricane Irma, mm-hmm. or the river might be dry and you might not be able to paddle it.
Figuring it out is a big part of how our expedition overcomes some obstacles. And to some extent, we develop alternate routes and contingency plans in the run-up so that when we come into a cul-de-sac or a dead end or some kind of obstacle we can't overcome, we can kind of gather ourselves in the field and adjust. Now, sometimes you're off on your own. You don't always stay kind of visually connected through these expeditions, and you know, you're often where you can't have cell service, and so communication can be hard. But as long as we kind of have a general idea, everyone has a general idea of where we're going and a general idea of where everyone is, we tend to find our way.
Just make your way.
So, make your way. But also, you know, our team is good at staying calm. I say that mostly with respect to my two colleagues are really good at kind of breaking problems down and going at them in a rational way, not getting overly excited and doing something rash that can get everybody in trouble.
Mallory's laughing about that.
I mean, yeah, well, she's laughing because it's coming from me.
About staying calm.
It does take all of us. And now that we've traveled 2,000 miles together, we kind of know what to expect from each other. And that's a big part of it.
I'm Robin Sessingham, and you're listening to Florida Matters. We're taking a short break, and we'll be right back. This is Florida Matters. I'm Robin Sessingham, and we're talking about the Florida Wildlife Corridor Expedition. Their 2018 Heartland to Headwaters Trek is coming up this month, and we're speaking with Mallory Likes-Demmett, Vice President of Strategic Development at Likes Brothers, Inc., and the former Executive Director of the Florida Wildlife Corridor. Carlton Ward Jr. is here. He's a conservation photographer, and he was a co-founder of the Florida Wildlife Corridor campaign in 2010. And from Charlottesville, Virginia, wildlife biologist Joe Guthrie, whose work tracking the bears in Florida was the inspiration for the first expedition in 2012. So the big focus of this short trek is going to be I-4. That's kind of running through the middle of your trip. How do you get your bikes across I-4? How are you going to do that? Is there an underpass or Carlton?
Well, we either go over or under. And Mallory and I had a chance last week to actually fly in a helicopter and scout the expedition route. It's pretty daunting looking at the amount of traffic that's moving across I-4 in this very busy stretch between Tampa and Orlando. Reedy Creek, because it's part of the Everglades watershed, has a canal going beneath the interstate, but there's not yet any ledging that would allow animals or people to actually walk beneath it. So we have a choice of whether we're going to kind of swim or wade our way beneath to draw focus on the fact that we could improve connectivity for wildlife, or we might go up and kind of skip our way through traffic across the top to show that that's the choices an animal would have in that case.
So this is the problem for wildlife, is a big problem is I-4 then.
And not just the interstate, but there's a number of roads and parkways, as you can imagine, sort of skirting the edge of Orlando. So there will be frequent crossings where we have to sort of make that choice, or where an animal would have to make that choice. And really highlighting just how dense the number of crossings are, and also that they're not all designed to be wildlife underpasses, and there's a lot of improvement that could make them better for wildlife.
Joe, in your work tracking bears in Florida, didn't you come across this realization in your work that kind of led to this whole project?
Certainly. I was working in more in South Central Florida in Glades and Highlands County on a very small bear population that's isolated mostly on privately owned ranches in the state, which is how I crossed paths with Carlton. Our interests overlapped there. But looking at GPS data that were coming back from our tracked bears, we started to see patterns of corridor use and core area use, where adult female bears tended to hold down or anchor on the large connected cores, and adult males would have the task of traveling from core to core using these very narrow little strips of habitat and creeks and, you know, hardwood swamp strands to move from spot to spot to mate with females and try to kind of make their living on an annual basis. And looking at those patterns, I really started to think about how that typified the state in terms of the bear population. We have 7 distinct subpopulations in Florida, and the connections between them are few and far between. And so that really got me thinking about, at the statewide level, what's going on from a bear conservation perspective and what's the long-term future.
So, Joe, did you actually ever see a bear trying to get across one of these highways? Did you ever track a black bear?
Yes, we had one bear we put a collar on in 2009. We talk about it often in our past expeditions. M34 was wearing a GPS collar, and in the summer after he was collared, we collared him in September, and in May the next year, when the breeding season came in, M34 took off on a really long and remarkable journey. It's really a frustrated dispersal effort, trying to leave his mother's home range and find a home range of his own to kind of set up shop and avoid large males who would compete with him for females. And so he made this long trek up the Lake Wales Ridge from about Sebring, Florida, up to I-4, right into the kind of Upper Lakes basin of the Kissimmee River watershed, which is where we're going to be. And it was remarkable when we got the data back to see how he had come up against I-4 at Celebration, and over the course of a week had stayed on the south side of I-4 trying to find a way across, and kind of ducking in among neighborhoods and trying to find his way across and never actually finding his way, and ultimately turned back, traipsed all the way back down the Lake Wales Ridge, and ultimately ended up right back where he started in the Everglades headwaters, but well down into Glades County and Highlands County, where he ultimately dropped his collar and went on about his way.
Wow. I used to live in the Panhandle, Florida, and it seemed like I was hearing a lot more about black bears being killed on the highways than I do now. Have we made some progress?
Well, we are making progress in the larger sense that the population has recovered from historic lows, you know, in these kind of core protected areas like Ocala National Forest, Apalachicola National Forest, the Big Cypress region. Bears, because of kind of game management laws, bears have started to rebound and are doing quite well and are very dense in some of those places. But if we don't do more to protect habitat, especially in these kind of bottomland hardwood swamps, which we're losing on it, you know, every day, those populations will kind of over a long term lose their genetic viability. So we need to make sure we keep these corridors open and restore corridors in some places to make sure that their connections can kind of remain functional. They can exchange genes between subpopulations.
They need to spread out.
They need to be able to spread out. That's right.
So let's talk about what's going on in the Florida legislature. You've been working on this now for many years, trying to get some public visibility and trying to get some political traction. What's happening? Are you seeing any progress in that area, Mallory?
Yes. Out of this last legislative session, there has been an increase in the amount of funding available for land and water conservation in the state. So, you know, we had historic funding levels of roughly $300 million a year. That had drastically declined in the last 8 to 10 years. But just this year, we're back at about $100 million for land conservation that could be used to help protect the Florida Wildlife Corridor.
Are you hearing any talk about the wildlife corridor, about linking? Okay, there's land preservation, but your whole thing is it has to be connected so that these larger animals can move from one part of the state to the other. Are you hearing any talk about that, Carlton?
I think our first two expeditions have helped put this idea on the map within some of the policymakers' minds. We still have a long way to go, but I think it's a very helpful argument, because if you're a lawmaker in Tallahassee without looking at a map, you might look and say, Florida already has a lot of public land. Why do we need more? I hope that the expeditions and the corridor maps that go with it can explain in a very logical way how we need to have large-scale interconnected corridors for the function of water and wildlife throughout the state.
Corridor science, I think, is more recognized, and we're really hopeful that the public is sort of following and catching on. And we oftentimes boil it down to a kind of three simple verbs, if you will, that we need to connect, protect, and restore these lands. And that's what sort of separates individual conservation efforts from a larger corridor approach statewide.
Is this sort of now or never for this connectivity effort? If we have some of these pieces of the corridor that are getting so narrow because of development. So what do you think, now or never?
I do believe it's now or never in some of these spots. Florida continues to grow by 1,000 people per day. That's a million people every 3 years. We continue to lose conservatively more than 100,000 acres of land every single year to accommodate development. Even with 100 million in Florida forever, we're still going to be losing three or four times the amount of land to development that we can actually protect with those resources. So we need to really accelerate the pace of conservation, and we need to do it now, because you know, Florida is a skinny peninsula. Habitat fragmentation really comes into play pretty quickly. And if you look at an aerial view of the area that we're going to be traversing later this month, you can see the headwaters of the Everglades connected to millions of connected acres for conservation down the middle of the state. You can see the 500,000 acres of the Green Swamp, which is the headwaters of four major rivers, three of which provide most of the water for the Tampa Bay region, and you see Interstate 4 right between. If we don't get serious about habitat connectivity, we could actually end up permanently cutting off the Everglades in the southern tip of the Florida Peninsula from the rest of the country. There's real progress that's been made east of Orlando, between Orlando and Daytona Beach, where they've actually put in three new wildlife underpasses in an area that we traversed during the 2012 expedition. Through the St. Johns River and its headwaters connecting to the Everglades, there's a fairly robust possibility for connectivity. But if we're not careful, the next bear that comes to this area will have no choice but to have to travel all the way east and around, and I don't even know that's in their natural dispersal route, because it could be a concrete veil between Tampa and Orlando that has no permeability for wildlife.
So what would you like to see happen?
I'd like to see a baseline of $500 million a year for land protection, consistent with what voters asked for with Amendment 1 in 2014. I think we just need to unlock the conservation funding that's already there. According to our current budgets, there should be $800 million a year available for conservation and land protection. Some of that is rightfully going to Everglades projects, but there needs to be substantial investment in conservation easements and strategic acquisition, which if we start doing what we're supposed to of those funds over the next 10, 15 years, we can actually achieve a lot of the protection to keep Florida connected.
But even with the acquisition and the conservation easements, if you have land on either side of I-4, what do you want to see happen to I-4 that's going to let the wildlife go through?
Well, it operates at two levels. I mean, you need the technical connection, which is provided by wildlife underpasses. But if you don't have robust green infrastructure on either side of these roads, then building that underpass is for no point.
So building an underpass, how expensive is that, Mallory?
I don't know numbers on the exact cost of it, but it is a significant planning effort that has to be part of the Department of Transportation's regional efforts, and they have to plan for sort of years in advance. So there is a whole network of planned underpasses, and usually that happens at the time we expend dollars to expand roads. So there is a possibility that as I-4 is expanded, you know, these underpasses can be added as part of those efforts, and that makes sense. It's very hard to retrofit existing roads, but it is very important to do the planning for them sort of in advance.
And I guess my point is, if we don't preserve the green space on both sides of the road, you're not going to build an underpass from a wildlife refuge to a subdivision. You've got to have robust green infrastructure crossing the roads. Then you can come back, and when the road gets widened, you can plan and put in underpasses or overpasses to help wildlife cross.
So, Joe Guthrie, tell me a little bit about what you're going to see in this next trip. You're going through the Green Swamp, which is kind of a special area.
Yes, definitely. We'll start, as I said, in the Reedy Creek floodplain, which is a fairly wide floodplain that's mostly hardwood, bottomland hardwood swamps and cypress trees, tupelo, black gum, and red maple. So we'll navigate this slow-moving creek basin. And then we'll hit what's known as the Lake Wills Ridge, which is rolling landscape, dominated kind of sandy upland oaks and sinkhole lakes. And on the other side of the Lake Wills Ridge, now we've moved across the ridge into to the west, into the kind of greater green swamp ecosystem. So it will be a lot of time under a forest canopy with our feet at different levels below water at
wet.
Some points in the mud will be very wet.
Yeah.
But it's also the kind of dry time of year. All right, we're near the low water point for the year in Florida. It's been a very dry winter, and it's about the time for fires to start popping up. So we've dealt with that on previous expeditions, and hopefully we won't have to this time, but we're prepared if we come across it.
That's Joe Guthrie. He and Mallory Likes Dimmitt and Carlton Ward Jr. make up the Florida Wildlife Corridor Expedition Team. Their journey starts on April 15th, and we'll be following along. Thank you to all of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Robin.
We always want to hear from you, and there are lots of ways to reach us. You can tweet us at Florida Matters or leave a comment on WUSF's Facebook page. You'll hear more of this conversation on our podcast, Florida Matters More. You'll find a link to subscribe on our website, WUSF.org, or you can search for Florida Matters More wherever you get your podcast. Florida Matters is a production of WUSF Public Media. The engineer is Richard Jimenez. The producer is Stephanie Colombini. I'm Robin Sessingham. Thanks for listening.